And good morning. Welcome to From the Stand. We're here once again live on EIA Radio, and this program made possible by the Commemorative Air Force. The mission of the CAF is education so that generations of Americans will value and support the contributions of military aviation in assuring our freedom. You can get more information from the CAF at their website, commemorativeairforce.org, or their Facebook page. This morning, we have four guests. We will be talking with Dick Rutan a little bit later on this morning. Also, Tim Jarvis with the Jack Lynx Waco, jet-powered Waco, and Pee-wee Martin, who is an original World War II veteran, D-Day paratrooper, 93 years old, still active, and last year jumped in Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day. So we're going to talk to him a little bit later on. But right now, we have National Oceanic
and Atmospheric Administration.
The administrator, Catherine Smith, great to have you here.
Sullivan,
sorry. yes, it's day three. So
day three.
Everything's up for grabs. So here we go. And you recently were approved as the administrator.
That's right. The president asked me to take the job in 2013. And about a year later, we got it through the Senate. So
good.
Here we are.
Good, good. As administrator, I mean, you're in charge of the entire thing, right? Everything. How far into the details do you have to get?
Well, we have a really great team. So in terms of how far I have to get to know things are working well, mm-hmm. The glorious answer is I don't have to get very far.
Good.
But the really cool answer is that as administrator, I can.
Good.
Across the whole range from making all the country's nautical charts to originating every weather forecast that any of us use, onto fisheries management and oceanography and, you know, the science of the planet as a whole, which is right up my alley.
Great. And we're glad to have you here. You are a private pilot, so you're very familiar with a lot of the airplanes that are out here, and a former NASA astronaut, so you're also familiar with some, a little more high-powered aircraft that are out here as well. T-38 landed last night. I'm sure you have plenty of time in those.
I do, and his 450-knot initial gave me fond memories. I used to be able to do those. I'm lucky if I'm doing 140-knot initial in my Super Decathlon now.
There you go. You were a part of the class of 1978, the first corps of astronauts that came in for the space shuttle program. You have three missions under your belt. And the first woman spacewalker. Congratulations on
that. Thank you.
And we are really pleased to have you here supporting Women Venture as well today.
Well, I'm delighted. I mean, it's so exciting to see so many gals around the flight line here at Oshkosh that are aircraft owners, that are aircraft commanders. I'm delighted and proud. We've got two NOAA Corps officers that are our aircraft commanders with us as well. If you visit the NOAA King Air out on the flight line, you'll meet Commander Waddington and Lieutenant Commander Waddington and Lieutenant Nicole Cavanaugh. And they're just fabulous. We have the coolest array of flying missions, from flying into hurricanes to scouting marine mammals and doing snowpack surveys to feed flood forecasts. Our folks are all over the country doing cool stuff all the time.
Excellent, excellent. Let's talk a little bit about your space travels. You have logged quite a few hours in space, three missions, as we mentioned. The first mission, your first launch, explain that experience to us.
You know, space flight is an amazing thing overall, but probably everybody's first flight, certainly mine. You know, you've learned about all the other flights, you've heard all the debriefs, you've been through the hundreds and hundreds of hours of simulations in which almost nothing goes right. And now it's for real. You know, now it's not the sim reset button. It's the real deal. All your planning coming to a focus. There are a number of interesting things. One is getting past that psychology of, I know something's about to go wrong. Because in the real world, the systems are very well built and they work really well. And so it pays to be overprepared, and we all know this as pilots. But if you've maintained things well and you've built them well, a lot of times that intense talent and training is not going to be needed. You could be really happy about that. But to get through that little wave and sort of settle in and relax into the flight, that was really great. Of course, the view out the window, and the sheer delight of zero-G, floating around, swinging around, playing with your food. I mean, you can't beat that with a stick. And we had a really spectacular array of things to do, from deploying a small satellite to doing our refueling experiment and our spacewalk. So it's just a great thing. My third flight, when you kind of know the rhythm a little bit and you've settled into a bit more, it's the perfect companion to that, because it's kind of like being an old hand getting back in an airplane you know real well, and they're both very special experiences.
Great. And one of the missions was launching the Hubble Space Telescope?
That's right. I was on STS-31, my second flight, So we were the crew that spent about 5 years getting the Hubble all ready to be repairable in orbit. So we're actually the guys that built the toolkit and wrote the repair manuals, and then had the fairly simple job of throwing it overboard. The silly fun part of that story is Bruce McCandless and I, who were the spacewalkers and who had worked on preparing for the mission in the toolkit for 5 full years, we almost had to go outside with our wrenches and fix something during the deploy. So after 5 years of preparation, we're the longest duration members of the crew with the most contact with the telescope. And at the moment it is released to its glorious scientific future, we're locked in a 6-foot diameter airlock staring at a blank white wall. Bittersweet.
Yes. But you did get to step outside and then the incredible view from being in space untethered and just...
We were tethered, but the window frame is still pretty cool. And you just move the spaceship out of your way. You're actually pivoting your body away from the spaceship so you can see things. But it feels like you're just moving the shuttle out of your way to get a great view. And it's a pretty good view from inside a space shuttle. But let me tell you, when you get rid of those window frames and the whole planet is there, it's pretty spectacular.
So from outer space to the ocean and undersea, how did you make that transition?
Well, it's actually a return loop for me because I started life as an oceanographer. And competing with the NASA selection when I was finishing my PhD actually was the opportunity to go down in Alvin submersibles and study the geology of the deep sea floor. So to my mother's great dismay, I was either going to get in a small submersible and go 8,000 feet down or in a small spaceship and go 200 miles up. She actually asked me one day whether there wasn't something exciting on the surface. So.
And with that, and you transition now into to NOAA, just describe all the things that the agency does, because, I mean, as pilots, we know about the charts and weather forecasts, but there's much, much more to it.
It's a really diverse agency. We say, and it's accurate, that our mission runs from the surface of the sun to the bottom of the sea. So the satellite that just sent back that first little portrait of the Earth from a million miles out, that's a joint NOAA-NASA satellite. Nice. For NOAA, its main purpose is to be the weather buoy that warns us about space weather events that are going to hit the Earth. So there's space weather, there's our conventional weather forecasting, long-term climate modeling. We are the National Hurricane Center. You sometimes don't hear NOAA on your TV news or weather. You'll hear the National Hurricane Center says, that's NOAA. You hear the Storm Prediction Center is saying, that's NOAA. You hear the National Weather Service is saying, that's NOAA. So nautical charts, all the weather stuff, spectacularly fascinating oceanographic research, marine fisheries management, coastal zone management, and we run the oceans, undersea and shoreline national parks, the national marine sanctuaries. So it's a pretty cool mix of things.
I think so. Is there a branch or an area that fascinates you the most?
Kind of all of it fascinates me a lot. I'll come back and highlight again. We're also the home base of the 7th and smallest uniformed service in the United States, the NOAA Corps. You'll see our folks around. Their uniforms look kind of like Navy uniforms, but if you peer a little bit closely at their insignia, you'll see a circle with a triangle in it. That dates back to Thomas Jefferson, who set that piece up in 1807 to start making the nautical charts for a very young country, and that's the forerunner of what is today all of NOAA. So we've got about 325 officers. They fly our aircraft from King Air to Turbo Commander to P3 to G4 for hurricane reconnaissance. They work our unmanned systems, airborne and in the water, and they command our ships. And they just have the coolest jobs.
Sounds great. Dr. Catherine Sullivan is our guest. You are here again. We mentioned Women Venture. You'll be speaking today.
Yep, and then also talking later in the afternoon, give folks a bit of an update on the things we're doing within the National Weather Service to try to improve how we're doing business and, in particular, how we're supporting the aviation community and the general aviation community.
Great. If someone would like to hear more from you, where are those taking place?
Oh, goodness. Air Venture is, I think, the afternoon event is at Theater in the Woods.
Okay.
And Air Venture, you'll see everyone around in the pink shirts posed for the photo, so I don't think we'll be hard to find for the Air Venture lunch.
Good. And obviously you're trying to give back with your support of Women Venture and encourage young women to explore all that aviation has to offer.
You know, it's a tremendous field to be involved in, whether it's the business side of operating an FBO or a major company or a corporate flight department. To the safety, the maintenance, and in the cockpit flying, there's just such a spectacular array of really neat jobs. And to be part of, you know, the integration of things that make aviation possible. You see it around here today. from the flight line to the marshals to the traffic control to the safety folks to the pilots and all the folks who have the service and supply companies. That's the ecosystem of aviation. And there's a place in there, there's a really cool niche that's right up your alley for absolutely everybody. And it's just wide open for women if you just go explore it and find your path and then just march down it.
Thank you so much for being here, not only is in your official capacity, but also to support Women Venture. I know EIA is very proud to have you here, and welcome back to Oshkosh.
Well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a great. I'm technically on leave this week, but I can't imagine a better place to be on leave than right here.
All of us are on vacation this week. It's
yeah.
A great place to be.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Catherine Sullivan is our guest, and she is the administrator of NOAA. Stop in and see their display here on Boeing Plaza. And from the stand, this is EIA Radio.